Hi, and welcome to episode 79 of Fully Boosted, a War Machine Hordes podcast. I'm Grant.
I'm Ryan.
I'm the King of Baltimore.
Oh, and I'm Pete.
Oh, man, I super didn't see that coming. I should have saved
didn't
that
think
for
he was,
you.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't think he was going to brag on that one that quick.
If I wait, like, it doesn't mean anything anymore.
No. You got to hop on it quick.
No, this was the time to use it. You're right. And on your birthday, of all days.
It's the only day I feel like I could get away with it.
Yeah, congrats on the Baltimore thing. That was super cool. And I think you wrote an article about it somewhere on Facebook, if anybody is interested in that.
Yeah, it's on the Baltimore site now. I reread it, realized I put at least one typo in there, so I'm pretty thrilled about that.
I mean, you know, that's okay. I feel like that's fine. And so I guess we got a couple housekeeping, news announcements, things to do. The Bocor Brawl weekend, the registration will open June 1st. That's going to be October 12th to 14th in Manville, New Jersey at the Thomas Cavanaugh VFW post. There's a team event, which is now going to be a five-man team, WTC style, and a War Machine Weekend wildcard event on, I believe that is going to be Saturday, and then ending on Sunday. There's a lot more information to check out. You get food and access to the bar. You could buy tickets for the whole weekend or just one day. So just go to thebocorbrawl.com, and that's B-O-K-U-R, and that's there's a lot of interest, and the team slots are going to fill up. I think they were able to expand to 32 teams this year, but they are going to go. So sign up for that as soon as it opens. Petey Bear, Brad, what you got?
We got a little event that we're putting together, a series of events. So inspired by the awesome work of Jonathan LeClaire on Baltimore.
And a host now of Battle Driven.
Yep, and host of Battle Driven. Myself, Brad Park, who else was involved? Michael Ireland, Seth Cohen, Steve Rabideau, and Mark Howard. We got together and we created our own series. So, Brad, why don't you tell the good folks about it?
Yeah, so it's kind of shamelessly stolen. We just kind of took their rules packet and changed some of the names in it. So we'll be hosting a tournament circuit out of the greater Philadelphia region. So there'll be qualifiers up in North Jersey, out in the western reaches of Philadelphia. I think how far is Portal from Philadelphia? It's about an hour and a half.
It's a good hour and a half, yep.
Yeah, so like an hour and a half west and about an hour east when you go into New Jersey down in the store that I run events out of. So I know a lot of our listeners aren't in the Philadelphia, New Jersey area. But for those that are, we'd love for you to join. And for those that aren't, the way the event works is each of those qualifying events, so there's six events beforehand, three in Pennsylvania, two are North Jersey, one in South Jersey. Four of those events have three players that qualify, so the top three from those events. There's one event which is a little bit smaller of a venue where only the top two get in. The sixth event is at a very large store, can hold a lot of players, and that's going to be the LCQ. It's the event we're doing last. Now, the person that wins that gets a spot in. And then for the 16th spot, we've come up with a way to give points out to the players that finish in top eight. Of these events, the person with the highest amount of points that has not already qualified by taking one of the top three spots in one of the previous events or winning the last chance qualifier will then be the person that gets in on the most accumulated points. That being said, the reason there's points that go to the top three players of these events is the finals themselves will be a separate event where the tournament is set up like a March Madness style bracket system. So it's single elimination in that you have to win all four of your rounds to win the event. We'll post the bracket ahead of time so that players can kind of start doing a little shit talking and maybe planning ahead if they want to about where they think their bracket may go. And we use the points for seeding within that bracket. So if you are able to win three of the six events, there's a fairly decent shot that you're going to be the first overall seed. And then you'll know that you're playing whoever comes in 16th kind of from there. The other thing, in order to fund this event to have prizes specific for the Liberty Brawl, which is what we've named it, is the tournaments that you're going to for these qualifying events are just standard steamrollers within their stores for the most part. If you win the event, you'll still walk out with store credit or however the store structures their prizes. But in addition to that, we as Liberty Brawl organizers are asking the participants in those qualifying steamrollers for like an additional $2 on top of the normal entry fee. We're going to pool that money between all of those qualifying steamrollers in order to fund the prizes we have at the end. You can find all the information for this, or the information we've put out so far, on the Facebook page we set up, which is just very simply called Liberty Brawl, or is it the Liberty Brawl?
It is Liberty Brawl, and you'll find it because it's listed as a festival.
Yes, it is listed as a festival. If you should find it, the logo is a Menoth Jack that's wielding, instead of a flail, has a bell on the end of it. So Pete is going to take the time to try and make that into a trophy for our winner. So you get to own the logo, if you will. We have a couple other of our organizers looking into prizes, either in the realm of like printed zones, maybe printed measuring sticks that you have, like similar to the faction ones, but with iconography for the Pennsylvania New Jersey event. The reason we're putting all that out there, especially for players not in our area, is again, we shamelessly stole this from John LeClaire, who's down in Baltimore. We've spoken to Brian Andrews, a guest we have on here fairly frequently down in Florida. He's interested in doing one and is looking to do so potentially next year. We think it's a tremendous event. It's a great way to chain a whole bunch of events together. You can really kind of just make it the usual steamrollers you already have running. Designate one ahead of time that's a qualifier. As long as you organize 5 to 6 qualifying events, at the end of it, you host a separate steamroller that's invitational only. And it's a great way to kind of drive players to not only want to compete to make it into the finals, but to maybe go to other stores that are not in their area to give them more shots at qualifying and thus expanding their meta knowledge, if you will. The one thing I didn't touch on, which I just thought of now, is say, for example, and I'm just going to use members of this cast as an example. For the first qualifier, myself, Pete, and Grant qualify. We take top three in whatever order you like. We go to the next event, and Pete takes first. The players that are from second through fourth would then qualify. It's the top three players that have not previously qualified. So it can cascade down. If you're at the fifth event, which has, I think that one's the Stomping Grounds one, which only has two players qualifying, and the top three players have all previously qualified at other events, it's going to go to the first two players that have not qualified up to that point. So the later events could potentially give you a little bit of an easier time to qualify as well.
Yep.
I think I hit on all of it.
Yeah, I think you nailed it.
You absolutely did. We're super excited to be bringing this to the area and for the community. And again, we stole it. We didn't ask permission, but we've gotten the thumbs up from Mr. LeClaire, and he has successfully ran this 3 times now in his area, Baltimore. Mm-hmm. So we're just chasing the success that he had. And
the structure changed up for his changed up a couple times through the years. I think the first way it was structured was that it was basically just a points event. There was there was like a whole slew of qualifying events. Multiple events, just a lot of them, where he just took the standings for it, and he had a way, and I forget the system how it worked, he had a way to give points to every player in the field, and then he took the total amount of points players got at the end of however many tournaments it was, and the top 16 points got in. So I went down, I think, to one or two of his steamrollers back when it was that format, and I think I won one of them and like came middle of the road in the other. And just because I was unable to go to them as frequently as I'd like, I didn't have enough points to make top 16. So I was not part of the invitational then. I think the way it works now rewards players that do well. It also rewards those that play more consistently with having the wild card spot where you can get in on the points you've accrued by hitting top 8. And then lastly, it then can potentially also reward you not only for the points you're accruing if you go to them consistently, but even if you don't manage to win it and you land in fifth, but there's two people already qualified up in the top three, well, then you've made it in. Like, this system makes it so that players from a little bit farther away have a reasonable shot of making it if they can top three a tournament, as opposed to having to make 4 out of the 6 of them or something, or over half to be in the points running.
Can I have any credit for whining at you guys and saying this is a thing that I want to happen, even though I didn't do anything?
No, I don't think so. So
okay, that's fair.
Back at the start of this Baltimore that just ended, so that would have been back in like the November timeframe, November 2017, Mike and I talked about putting one together, and our conversation was not much above base level of just, you know, this is something that we'd like to do, just speaking with each other. We can rope in these stores. At the time, I think Mike and I wanted to have a qualifying event down in Ice House when they were still open. And then we kind of shelved it while Baltimore was running because we didn't want to run them concurrently. Because like Mike and myself and a handful of other players from Philly will head down south into the Maryland area to play in their qualifiers, and we don't want to run them at the same time to have players have to choose. So we kind of shelved it and didn't talk about it. And then maybe a couple weeks before the actual invitational for Baltimore happened, I forget who started the conversation back up, but I think it might have been Pete, saying that, you know, this is something that we really should put together and now's the time to do it. And then with the help and support of kind of all of the community organizers that are kind of spread through the area, Pete, myself, Seth, Rabideau, Ireland, Mark, kind of all the figureheads of their own individual communities, it culminated very quickly into where we're at now, where we have, aside from one store, the schedule set for all of the qualifying events, and the one that we don't have set is the one that's the farthest out, so the one in September, so we're pretty well set there. Beyond that, we are hoping to start in June, and when I say hoping, I mean we are starting in June because the event's already scheduled. So we're starting in June, and the goal is to have it wrap up, I think, at some date in October, which is yet to be determined for the Invitational. And then that means Baltimore, their qualifying events, start again back in November. So it makes it so that we have them running at opposite times of the year so that their northern-ish players can be our southernmost players. And then when they start running, our like southern and middle-of-the-ground players can be their northern players. So we kind of get to bank off each other in formats that we're soon going to both be used to.
Yep. The other awesome thing is we're gonna have the steamroller changeover towards the beginning of the qualifying events. Yep. So I think the first two will be 2017.
Yep.
Right now we're running just standard steamroller formats. The qualifier we are gonna use Masters format. So right now if you do see the rules packet, it's which we're gonna post on Monday. I think it'll be April 30th. It does list DNC and, you know, what we know of Masters now, but if there are any changes, we'll make sure to update the packet and let everyone know.
I thought, and now we're debating this while we're on the podcast, but I thought only the Invitational was Masters and all the other things were just steamroller rules.
Yeah, correct. He said that. He's just saying that.
I completely misheard you.
He's just saying it's subject to change based on what comes out in the next in the Masters packet for 2018.
I completely understand. My apologies. Yeah, you're right.
Yep. So we are looking at, as you can tell, we're super excited to get this thing going. And again, I want to thank Mr. LeClaire for letting us steal his work. And for anyone out there that wants to run one of these, feel free to reach out to us, and we're probably going to point you to Jonathan, and he's obviously the master.
You can just reach out to us on the cast. You don't necessarily have to find the event page like I had listed before. If you just want to reach out to us on the cast, Pete or I will see it at some point and happy to message back to you or send you resources that we have available to us. And really, if you copy the packet that we have set up or the packet that John has set up, the only thing you'd reasonably have to do to have a functioning and working event is change the dates to the ones you want to hold them on and to the store locations we're going to hold the events at. But it's a great way to tie some communities together that, while they're not fragmented or just separated by a little bit of distance, they have qualifiers up in their own area. The Invitational's in a central or the most central location we could probably get, with it being directly in Philadelphia. So we're excited for it.
Yep. And I do want to move on. I just want to say, somebody that did not plan it, just looking at it from, I mean, this was something I'm not saying I suggest. This is something I've been saying for a while that I wanted to see happen. But looking at this, it just gives that little something extra into these events, right? Like, as opposed to just your normal steamroller with 15, 16, 20 people, whatever, it's just that little something. Like, I'm more inclined to travel and make more of these events than I may normally have done just because of the whole format. So I think that for a, not saying I'm more casual, but like, I mean, I don't go to the same amount of events that you or Pete go to, obviously. So for somebody like me who can generally only do one a month, like, this is like, oh, I got to get to this one. Oh, I got to get to this one and try to make it to three of the five. So I think as somebody not part of the organization looking at this from the first time, I think this type of event is phenomenal, and I would definitely suggest, even not having played in one, just looking forward and looking at this, I think this type of idea is a great idea, and I think people should shamelessly steal this, kind of like you guys have did. I'm going to say we, because fuck you, but...
That's fine.
So that's that, and like they said, you can contact any of us, even if you get a hold of me, whatever, we'll point you in the right direction. So
don't talk to Graham.
Don't talk to me, though, because I'm terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on. We had Kingdom Con this past weekend, I guess it was, right? And then, so we had some Kador pre-release stuff, so we're going to cover those real quick, because there's only a few of them, and then we're going to get into something else a little bit later. So the first thing was we had Sorsha 3 come out. So she's Commandant Sorsha Kratikoff. She's a Man of War Warcaster. She has 28 Warjax points, is a whopping speed 4, mat 7, rat 6, def 12, arm 18, command 9. She's on a, what's 40 mil? Is that medium base?
Yeah. She's a Man of War.
Immune to cold. She's got a range 12 AoE 3 POW 13 cannon, a range 2 POW 16 magic weapon, and melee weapon, excuse me, and she is focus 6. She's got Field Marshal Flank Man of War. She's repairable, has Storms Embraced, so while in this model's command range, friendly faction models gain concealment. Her cannon has Arcing Fire, and Frostfang has Crit Smite and Freeze. Her spell list, she's got Iron Flesh, Stoke the Fires, which is cost 1, range 6, target-friendly faction Warjack gains plus 2 speed and countercharge. She's got Wind Rush, her signature spell, and Winter's Wrath, which is cost 3, range 8, AoE 4, POW 14. Winter's Wrath causes cold damage. Models hit become stationary for 1 round unless they have immunity cold. Her feat is called Dead of Winter, and it is plays D3 plus 3, 3-inch AoE cloud effects anywhere completely in her control range. These AoEs remain in play for 1 round. A model without immunity cold suffers 1 point of cold damage for each dead winter AoE it enters or ends its activation within. So
enters or ends, not when it's placed.
Correct.
I feel so much better. Okay, great.
Yeah, she can't just lay him down and immediately remove all single wound inventory from
you.
All
right.
Yeah, that's way better for you. Yeah. So what do you guys think about her? I like that Field Marshal Flank Man of War is pretty baller.
Yeah, to be fair, the lists you're going to end up taking her in, though, they're going to be... well, I guess she could be interesting in a Winter Guard command list, in which case you might have more jacks and stuff, and she herself is a Man of War, right? Yes.
She is, yes.
So there's some solos you could sneak in there and stuff like that. But I mean the issue is you're not gonna have a lot of jacks if you're taking her in Iron Command, you're not gonna have a lot of jacks, right? You're gonna have almost all of your points in infantry. But it does help those jacks perform a little more efficiently. I will say, I really, Storm's Embrace is so good on paper until you're like, oh yeah, right, I'm going to take her with a bunch of defense 10 infantry.
I mean, it's good if she, it's a good ability to have if you're going to play her in a different theme. Right? I mean, because she, I don't know that she always is going to have to play in Manowar theme.
Like, no.
There's other places.
There might be other themes. I don't know. I don't know what survives past Armored Corps and or Armored Command and Winter Guard Command then. But no, I like her. I like her a lot. I think she's kind of interesting. This Stoke the Fires. I mean, it is obligatory. Kador needs its speed buff on it, and any good caster. She's got a pretty nice one with the counter charge ability. And the fact that it's plus 2 speed, not plus 2 inches of movement is nice. The Iron Flesh, having that with her, again, really sings to putting her with some Man of Wars or something with higher armor that puts it up over the edge. She got Wind Rush back, which is part of the reason why Sorsha 2 has so many issues. It really helps with her speed. Like, so now she can actually move around the battlefield still pretty well. And defense 14-18 with the focus mechanic seems pretty good.
Well, and she's going to be a 16-18 because she gets concealment. Too.
Well,
so I mean,
yeah, I'm assuming they don't ignore the concealment. Yeah,
sure, but I mean, against most things, 16-18's fucking pretty good, and she has 17 boxes. I don't know if I said that or not, but
not sure. Yeah, she's gonna be a little bit of a monster. She now almost hits as hard as Butcher, which is kind of. Oh no, they got rid of. She has Freeze, not the Shatter ability. Okay, so
No, but she's a man of war, so she can. Oh no, she doesn't get flanked. Yeah. That's not as.
Yeah. No. So she's not quite a butcher, but she's still really nasty. If you let her, she'll kill you.
Yep.
So is she a must buy or is she a wait for the Black Friday sale on Miniature Market?
Well, I don't see why you wouldn't take her. I think she probably is a must buy. I hate the D3+3 clouds. I hate the randomness of it. Four, having a minimum of four is not bad. Four is normally what you need for it, but cloud walls are not nearly as effective as they used to be because, you know, one of those when everybody has it, it's less of a. You're more likely going to run into somebody who's got a cloud wall answer. Hers doing a coin of auto damage is kind of nice to make them somewhat different. I could see her fitting in a bunch of different places. I would say you got to get her. And to be fair, it's Sorsha in Man of War armor. Like,
well, yeah, I mean that's a given. So.
Yeah, I feel like that. I mean, I'm not saying she has to play in Armored Core because I think there's other places. But I mean, I think the flank Field Marshal combined with Stoke the Fires is enough to at least get her played. I don't know. And that, like I said, the differentiating her from other Cloudwall casters by having that point, I think, is a really big deal. I think there's some really good control there for anti-infantry.
It's an odd one too because you could stack them if you know they've got to come on like your caster or on a jack or something. You could really stack them up where somebody's taking, you know, 3 points of damage, 4 points of damage. That could be.
All right, come on.
Yeah, I think
that's never going to be worth it ever.
No, I agree with Brad. I think the most likely scenario is maybe you overlap them a little, and if someone has to take that path, they take two. But I don't know. I don't.
It would be kind of funny to watch like champs go in on something.
Yeah, so the only reason they overlap is like you roll your D3 plus whatever, you roll a 5, so you get 6 clouds in total, and you're only trying to cover like 12 inches of space between like an obstruction and a forest, and going around the outsides doesn't matter.
And you're just like fuck you don't. It.
So you double them up or you like put them so they're like two layers, so that way when things move through and they take more than one, but you're never going to do it. It's like, haha, I gotcha, now your solo takes two as opposed to one.
Yeah.
Like,
I agree.
They're going to move through it, unless they have to move through 5, which I think is nuts if you put 5 together.
So I'm
5 fucking AoEs on top, like they just fall across the whole table.
Well, or like, I'm just thinking if you're going to get charged, if you've got I know it's a very corner case, but it'd be kind of cute the time you do it. You get like someone moving up for
time you do it, Ryan, is what you meant to say.
Yeah, well, whatever.
Scribing does not exist.
The
only thing that could come up, and hear me out on this one, is if you're like playing a scenario game that's really close, and you roll and you get a total of 5 clouds, so you have to roll 3 up, you put all 5 clouds on top of each other, on top of their flag. If their caster goes up to get it, any soul that goes onto it dies.
Yeah, see, there you go. There's a good spot for it. I was thinking of Ragman, too. Like, if Ragman's got to move up to a specific area, you could put 5 clouds down on the spot that Ragman would have to walk to save from getting affected by Deathstrap.
Yeah, and like when you're saying the feat isn't that great because things have answers to cloud walls, like it's multifunction. It's not just like Jarl feat. Yeah.
This is true.
Yeah, it's not. You have a scather wall for factions that have infantry they're trying to bring in, which is fairly common at this point. And then for those that are like all the warjack or war beast like brick style lists, most of those don't see through clouds. Like their answer is to like kind of wade into melee, hold your hand for a turn, and then try and fight you the turn after.
It's also charge denial for your mana wars that are typically slower than most other things that you're be seeing across the table.
Absolutely.
I think that's, it is not just a cloud wall.
Yeah, I do like her. I do think that the point of damage does add, like I said, it helps differentiate it from other cloud wall casters. I definitely think there's some stuff there.
Pete, real quick, because you're the owner of all factions, what do you asked the question, what do you think?
So I've been told that we're buying her. So,
well, yeah, I guess when your wife's main faction is Kador,
Trish definitely. She's already built a couple lists, and we're gonna have to get one each of the tankers and Sorsha 3. So,
but one each. You're not doing the 3 tanker build? Oh, come on now.
I'll have Trish talk to you.
Don't tempt him.
Oh, my God. Speaking of that, what are the Man of War tankers? Let's find out. We have the Man of War Strike Tanker, Cicador Solo. It's speed 4, mat 7, rat 6, def 9, arm 17, and it is a large base. It's got a range 12, rate of fire 1, POW 8 slug cannon, and 2 half-inch range POW 12 shields. So that puts it at def 9, arm 21, with 10 boxes and costs 5 points and are FA2. It has bulldoze, dual attack, and repairable. And the slug gun has grievous wounds, armor piercing, and is a siege weapon. So yep. Additional die against huge base models.
Yeah, it's really nice. I think in most builds that I've had, I end up taking at least one of these guys. Not even for necessarily the armor pierce; it's almost always for the grievous to make sure that like war beasts can't heal, you can't repair anything. A POW 8 armor pierce is pretty good, especially if you take it with like something like Hand of Fate or with like a Butcher 1. It can get really nasty very quickly.
And they surprisingly are rat 6, so they're not even like awful. Like POW 8 armor pierce is pretty legit. And just for a solo going to sit on a fucking flag, it's arm 21 with 10 boxes. Like that is not nothing.
No.
How many boxes does it have? 10, though?
10. You said, yeah, it's 10 boxes.
Well, you can only get 6 clouds with Sorcia 3, so...
that's awesome.
Yeah, I do like it. As it is, I like the other one better. I think the other one has more flexibility, and I think when you're paying... When you have a solo like this who's going to draw so much attention because it is on a large base, I like the versatility of the other one a little bit better.
Yeah.
But yep. One definitely has some really neat the dual attack offers a lot of interesting plays as far as getting that grievous shot where you need it. There's a lot of stuff you can do with it. Having bulldoze is just always fun on something like this. It can't boost a hit, so you kind of, if you're going into hard targets like jacks and stuff, which is where you kind of want it, you don't need it, so the rat 6 is great. But if you're trying to tag a solo or something a little more dodgy, it definitely needs a little help hitting.
It's not meant for that. I mean, when you're shooting an armor pierce shot, like, I mean, having hunters and having played hunters, you're not doing that. I mean, I unfortunately had the ability to boost with them, but that type of gun is meant for a heavy target.
Yeah.
It's range 12, so, I mean, a lot of times you may be able to just fucking aim, and now you're shooting rat 8, which is a lot more respectable. So.
Yeah.
The other one is identical with the exception that its gun, it has 2 range 10 rate of fire D3 POW 10 volley guns. It costs 6 points. It does not have dual attack or what was the other ability?
It has bulldoze still.
Still has bulldoze, yeah. Sorry, just not dual attack.
Correct.
And the volley gun has covering fire and full blast, which is a star attack. The weapon becomes spray 8 and POW 14, and it has volley fire, so the weapon's attack rolls against warrior models are boosted.
Yes, boosted rat 6s at POW 14 spray 8s. This thing's really nice.
Right. Real quick, so the covering fire star action, does it put down one,
it puts one
template?
Yep.
Puts okay. One. It's a star action, it replaces all of your initials.
Yep.
And then full blast.
Again, star action replaces all of your initials.
Cool. Got it.
You get one spray. So the other things that have multiple covering fire templates, like the Stormwall, they're not star actions. They're just a thing, the ability the gun has. So you can you can opt to place a wall template, or like the grenades from the jacks that put down targeting flares. It's just a thing it says underneath. Instead of rolling a normal attack, you do this. So this is an actual star action. So everything that stops you from doing a star action does stop you from putting these down or spraying or putting the covering fire down.
So, Pete, gotcha. They're both FA2, so you're buying 4 of them?
I don't believe so. I think Trish only wants one of each for right now.
My God. All right. Keep it that way. Just keep telling. Yeah, no, you only need one. One of each. That's it. That's all you need. It's great.
Yeah. I believe there was a minute where he also had dual attack, but that's just broken, so.
Sure.
It's a good thing they got rid of it.
Sure. All right, on to the units. We have Commandant Atanas, Arkonovich, and Standard.
Perfect.
Yeah, nailed it. My Russian is great. It's a Kator Manowar unit. They're speed 4. He is mat 8, rat 6, def 10, arm 16. And he is command 10. He has a range 12, pow 12 hand cannon and a range 2, pow 15 greatsword. The standard bearer is mat 7 with a range 1, pow 13 gladius. They are 7 points and they have 8 boxes each. He can give battle plans. The first one is heroic call. It's target friendly man of war model unit. They gain tough. It's range 5. Relentless tide, which gives relentless charge. Also range 5, and Unstoppable Fury, which gives retaliatory strike to Man of War model units. He is also repairable and gives tactician to Man of Wars, and the standard just increases his command by 2, so his command goes up to 12 for the tactician bubble.
Yeah, which is huge. That really lets the Man of Wars, especially the shield, the shock troopers, the shield wall units, really lets them do their job. Where the shield, now you can have your shield wall units go up, get in people's faces, be bricked up in their shield wall, be unmovable because of their UA, and you can have Demacore charge through them. You can have bombardiers and stuff do their job from behind them, or you can have them charge through each other without having the awkwardness that is shield wall on medium bases. The tactician is relentless charge is amazing, and I feel like that's going to be the one they're always using. And the tactician ability is huge for the type of list you're going to be taking. I really want heroic call or unstoppable fury to be kind of cool. Like, retaliatory strike's neat. If you're going in on Man of Wars, maybe not on the shock troopers. Maybe on the shock troopers, really, Unstoppable Fury will be really nice. But the other ones, I've always felt that if you're going to put something into Man of Wars, you're putting something in that's killing them reliably, not like plink deathing them. So I don't know about retaliatory strike. I'm sure there's times that it's going to be incredibly useful, but just having something to give Pathfinder to another unit of Man of Wars is amazing.
I haven't played it obviously, but just looking, I mean, they're arm 16 or 17 with 8 boxes, and that seems like a pretty respectable amount to have retaliatory strike.
It's 16. The ones that don't have the shields are only arm 16 with 8 boxes. But 16's, I don't know. I sometimes just feel like it's not enough. If somebody is putting the wrong thing into them, sure. But normally if someone's going into the Man of Wars, they know what they're going into and they're hitting them really hard, either with like a jack or with something a little bit more over the top. Or it's something that's plink deathing them anyway and they're outnumbered, 40 to 15, and the retaliatory strikes don't matter as much.
Well, Sergeant Hammers has a mini feat of Sanguine Bond.
Yep,
this is true, and like that's what I'm saying. There are times that it is very useful.
Yeah. Also, too, the tactician for Dracoons is going to be amazing. You can shield wall up and then have them countercharge through.
There's a lot of stuff that's going to be that having tactician on them is just absolutely amazing. It really lets shock troopers, like I said, just even being able to charge out in different directions or being able to charge in or move in with shield wall. And because when you only have 4 inches and you're trying to move up or 6 inches and you're still trying to move back into the right positions to be in shield wall or get charge lanes, it can be really tough at the medium bases. Tactician just erases all of that problem.
Yep.
Yeah, it rewards sloppy play. I love it.
Yeah, it's just, haven't you heard? Tactician's just a crutch.
I mean, I like having it.
No,
like,
no. It's
I get to play like an idiot whenever I do.
Yeah, it's great. It's definitely, I don't get punished as bad for being a shitty player and not planning ahead as well as much as I should have.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like,
this is the best.
I might just pay 5 points out of my list to have Tactician all the time.
I would super do that. All right, on to the Man of War Bombardier Officer. who I just clicked off of. There he is. He's speed 4, mat 8, rat 7, def 10, arm 16. He's got CRA. He's command 9, and he's obviously the officer. He's got a grenade cannon that's range 12, AOE 3, POW 14, and a range 1, POW 13 chain blade. He costs 5 points, is FA3, and is 8 boxes. He grants clear cut while in this model is in formation. While advancing as part of a full advance, models in its unit gain Pathfinder. He's repairable. He has support fire as a mini feat, which gives the bombardiers dual shot, so if they aim, they can make an additional ranged attack. And he has tactics quick work. And then his grenade cannon has arcing fire, and his chain blade has crit shred. Is that what the bombardiers were missing?
Did the bombardiers themselves gain anything?
Yeah, I think they changed, but it doesn't come out yet.
Yeah, so
Well, hold on, Ryan. The interesting thing is that the UA is a range 12, and the standard unit is range 10 on Scund. So that doesn't exist anywhere else in the game. So I'm pretty sure they're going to get a bump up to range 12.
Yeah, they're going to, because he's actually got the same named weapon. It's still just called a grenade cannon. It's not like Mark II grenade cannon or like, you know, Bertha or something like that. I definitely think that would be. Could definitely be if they go to range 12. So as of right now, I think that this definitely helps them a lot. Quick work is kind of cool on them. Clear cut's kind of neat, letting them move up into, because that's always a big thing with units that rely on relentless charge and stuff. Is like, it's like, but if they can't charge, well, the unit doesn't always want to charge. They're trying to move into position, so that's kind of neat. Support fire is kind of cool. Like, all of these neat abilities are neat, and bombardiers were always at the point where it was like, they had a bunch of, especially with CRA, they had a bunch of stuff that they could, they just needed something else to push them over for their points. I think his abilities definitely do. I think that they're still would be still just tweaked a little too low at that point. If they go up to range 12, that lets them play their game, where they're the second wave, they're the artillery piece, if you will, that's sitting right behind all the mana wars, the rest of the mana wars, and is lobbing shots in against that 30 Halblist, where they crash into the shock troopers, and then these guys just go and hit right over their shoulders. And then they can now they can charge in, have dual attack to help up their attacks, the number of shots the number of attack rolls that they're going to be making. Same with support fire for the turn. They need to get two shots off. So I definitely think that this makes them playable. Range 12 will make it better. Past that, yeah, I think, again, as long as they're not immune to blast damage, these guys will be fine.
Yep. And, Pete, I didn't even catch that, so that was a good catch on your part.
Oh, I didn't catch it. So,
well, you did. Was... You did as far as this cast is concerned.
Oh, okay, got it.
So good job. And the last one is Sergeant Dragos Dragodovich. Dragodovich.
That actually sounded pretty good.
All right, we're getting there, guys.
I don't know if you used the right letters, but it sounded good.
He was in the Adepticon release. I don't know if you want to go over him or not.
Oh, he was? Oh, why did I think he was? Okay, my bad.
Well, skip that guy.
Yeah, fuck that guy then.
The model is pretty damn cool, I have to say.
Of
all the Man of Wars, he's double hammers is it's a sweet model.
It is definitely a sweet line, and adding vengeance and defense line to the demo core certainly helps. The turn of Sanguine Bond is amazing. It's a lot of stuff in there that helps fix some of their issues. I think Vengeance, defense line, I wish it was the other one.
Wall of Steel.
Wall of Steel.
Yeah, but you already have, what armor buffs do you have? What's the one Sorcerer 3 just got? Invaluable Resolve, or whatever it is?
She got Iron
Flesh. That's what I meant.
Plus 2 armor. Yeah, and that is in a bunch of places, and that takes him to 18, which does help. The big thing it was, you took Shock Troopers if you didn't want them to die, and you took Demo Core if you wanted more of the glass cannon style, where when they got there, they got to make multiple attacks or they got to hit like Weapon Masters, and they got rid of all of that. They are POW 16 now, which is kind of nice, but they suffer horribly from not having enough attacks now because they can't opt to do the two attack one. And that's kind of why they really went away, completely away, because Bombardier or Shock Troopers could now make two attacks because they got assault, right? So they could charge in with their assault shots and still make their normal attack as well. So these guys getting Vengeance makes a pretty big difference because now you can give them a couple, you can charge in with one or two guys, and then you can try to make sure that your Vengeance attacks are going to be useful attacks. That helps generate the more, again, generate more attacks from the small model count unit. And Sanguine Bomb lets you keep the ones that are alive. And he's just, he's pretty nasty. The Mat 8, having a Mat 8 with the two hammers is very nice.
And I think that is all the pre-releases, right? Did I miss anything?
And a mag.
Oh, yeah, fuck. Yep, yeah. Got to talk about that, too.
I was thinking only in Kator.
Me, too. Oh. I fucked up. Because Animag looks baller. So, Legion, I feel you, buddy. Animag the Doomfeaster, Legion Bladed Ogryn Warlock. She's Fury... She? I think it's a she, right?
It's a she.
Okay, there we go. She is Fury 7, Speed 5, Mat 6, Rat Doesn't Matter, Def 14, Arm 16, Command 8 with Tough. She has a Range 2, Pal 13, Fanged Staff that is Magic Damage and Blessed. She has 27 Warbeast Points and 17 Boxes. She has Ritual Slaughter. Once during each of your turns, when another friendly Bladed Ogryn model destroys an enemy model with an attack while in this model's control range, immediately after the attack is resolved, this model can cast a spell without spending Fury, and this model can boost attack and damage rolls on spells cast as a result of Ritual Slaughter. She has Snacking, and her staff has Mancatcher, which is a warrior model hit by this attack, suffers -2 defense, and for one round cannot advance while within this model's melee range. Her spell list, she has Bond of Gristle and Bone, which is a cost 2 range 6 upkeep. Target friendly faction warrior model unit gains +2 armor and feign death. She has Carnage, Fury Strength, which is a cost 2 range 6 not upkeep. Target friendly faction warrior model unit gains +2 strength for one turn. She has Gallows and Hexblast. And her feat is called Field of Bones. While in Animag's control range, friendly faction warrior models gain Dark Shroud, and their melee weapons gain Grievous Wounds. Field of Bones lasts for one turn. Ugh. So not excited for her to be on the table.
She is gross as shit.
So good. She's got, like, okay, I get it. Gallows is not the best, like, threat extension, but, like, just looking at it, you've got a damage buff, you got a hit buff, an arm buff, a damage buff, threat extension, and upkeep removal. That's also a nuke.
Let's say it this way, right? So she's got everything, and sure, her threat extension is the shitty threat extension, but it's still threat extension, and it's in Legion that already has a ton of threat extension.
And then your feat of being an arm debuff, and then Grievous. It's really good.
And if she's taking her bird, she's going to get +2 death against living models because of Swarm. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, she's going to be really good. Like, I don't know how often Mancatcher's going to come up, but as long as she's got her bird, man, she's actually pretty hard to deal with. I mean, like, it's just, I don't know, it's something maybe... It's kind of nice to see Legion get something besides just the calluses that can go and be up the table and be like, I'm not going to die here. But, man, it is really good.
Sorry, I'm laughing. It sounds like your kids are killing each other.
He's just walking around the house screaming randomly. I love it.
Was Amok already out? Was that an Adepticon one?
Yeah, it was.
Okay. All right, then we will not talk about that. All right, so now I think we got everything from Kingdom Con, and I think we should be seeing the Manowar dynamic update here in the next couple weeks. And then the Menoth one starts next week, which is exciting. But to our topic, so this kind of came up through, we have a chat with Brandon ongoing that, I don't know, occasionally actually is War Machine related. And we kind of ended up on this conversation. Brandon was talking about writing an article about, like, casters that he would play competitively if he played other factions, and we kind of thought it would be fun if we assigned other factions to each other that we don't play and make each other either build lists or just pick casters that we thought would be fun to play. I don't know how you guys all took it. I went semi-competitively. I didn't just go, I want to play this one because this is janky and fucking cool with this list. I tried to like keep it somewhat realistic for a competitive scene. But basically went through and we each have a couple factions and we're going to go through the casters or lists if we have them that we would play. So I'm going to start at the top and we're going to go in PP order. So we've got Pete on Signar.
Yep. So I kind of went the way you described it. I will say I did look at Sturgis just because I've never looked at his card. And I will say this was a very interesting exercise of thought, is to sit down and seriously look through another faction and look and see what their casters do. So highly recommend it to everyone. So going back to what's competitive, obviously, Haley 3 and one of the strikers is going to be a good choice. But I looked at it as, would I really sit down and try to play Haley 3? I've played into her a lot. She's like an ogre. There's many layers. I don't want to use the playstyle word because Brad's going to.
Did you mean?
Go ahead.
Did you mean an onion? I feel like I missed something in that ogre joke.
Haven't you seen Shrek?
Oh, yeah, sure. Right. Okay. Didn't catch it at
first.
Oh,
boy. I think we watched a different movie, Pete.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, boy. Go ahead, buddy. Wow. I'm sorry.
No worries. So I'm not going to invest the time to try to learn Haley 3. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen for me. So I do like the control aspect, though, of that, of what she can do. So I would definitely play Haley 2. Mm-hmm. Played her before. At the beginning of Mark III, I gave her a whirl. Obviously, she's changed since then. But especially in today's meta with Asphyxius 3 and 9 Slayers, Domination is going to do wonders to that matchup, as well as TK. Slayers aren't charging you if they're turned around and you're shooting them in the ass. So I think that's a very viable choice. Thoughts?
I think you're absolutely correct. I think we've actually, I have a chat with the guys from the Signar podcast, and I think we've actually been having similar conversations. I think it actually came up when we were talking to McWaters at dinner at the Sioux, where I was like, okay, from a Signar perspective, if I was going to build a list into your Gatsby 3 Slayers that you didn't want to see, what would it start with? And his answer was Haley 2. So, yep, I think you are on the absolute right track.
Okay, and so I always want to pair a control-type caster with a melee-centric caster. The obvious thing here is Siege 2, mm-hmm. but God damn it, I painted Beth Maddox, and I've never played her. looking at her kit, I know she's probably not the most popular in Signar, but she has a sail, which is going to be great, because that target warjack can run her charge or slam or power attacks without spending focus. And then she also has Dauntless Resolve, which is going to be great for a unit. The shitty thing about Signar is their units themselves.
Yep.
I was going to like, okay, let's build a list. I could throw it up on my channel, and that's where we stopped. So I'm definitely playing Maddox. I just don't know what to run with her.
Did you build a list for Haley too, or did you stop there? Just out of curiosity.
No, I was thinking about do it, but I'm trying to focus on a faction for Store Wars.
Okay.
So I didn't want to build too many lists.
Okay. No, that's fair. The weird thing is whenever I look at Maddox, I'm always like, man, her kit's really good. She's got, Arcane Shield on steroids. She's got Snipe. She's got Pathfinder, albeit it's the shitty kind of having to charge. And then she's got a sail and then a nuke that can disrupt Jax. And then a damage feat. And then for some reason, you go, like you said, maybe it's the units, you just go to player and you're just like, ah, god damn it, this is terrible. I like where your mind's at, though. I mean, Gibbs played her. I think Maddox, I don't think she's as bad as, we tend to make her out to be.
No, there's definitely worse stuff in Signar for sure.
I like it. All right. Anything else on that, Pete?
No. Like I said, I think this was a really interesting exercise to go through and say, all right, what would I play and why? So.
Yep. I'm actually going to second that. You and I had a conversation today where I had Menoth, which is why I'm going next, but I was looking through and I was like, man, I know I just briefly, but like the 2 hours I spent doing this, I felt like I understood the faction just a little bit better, like more than I have by playing against them several times. I really felt like I was like, okay, like I'm starting to see some of these synergies that for whatever dumb reason my mind didn't put together otherwise.
No, it's that whole action of, or that whole act of becoming a student of the game rather than just a practitioner of it. You know, you're like, you're learning it and then you're going out and applying it.
Yep. So I actually built lists and I'm willing to share my terrible, list building so that everyone can make fun of me mercilessly. So I had Menoth, like I said, my favorite caster in Menoth is Severius II. Because I think Oracular Vision is fucking stupid, and awareness in SR2017 also seems really stupid. So I started with him, because if I was going to play Menoth, that is 100% the caster that I would go with. I thought Creator's Might is probably where he wants to play, because he wants a heavy battle group. So I went with a Hierophant, Blessing of Vengeance, a Devout, 2 Reckoners, 2 Redeemers. That's just kind of where I landed with my points. I think there's probably better things than Redeemers, but even with inaccurate and being able to ignore the terrain, I thought maybe, I don't know, I thought maybe that would be okay. The Book, 2 Vassals, Roven, and then Max Choir. So that's kind of where I landed. Pete, I don't know, you know Menoth a little better than me. How fucked is that?
No, it's not. It's not fucked. I definitely like the thought of being able to rain down shrapnel on somebody hiding behind a force, right? Or am I making that up?
No, I think that sounds right. I mean, he's got awareness, so
yeah. So, and because you know you're always hiding your support back behind terrain, so that's definitely a good thing.
I mean, he's got Ashes to Ashes, which he can cast for free one time through Blessing of Vengeance, so I felt like Blessing maybe gets Arcane Ward, and then you can go with him as you need. You've got your infantry clearing through that. You pick out important solos with his feet when you need to.
Yeah, that's the moneymaker right there. It's just being able to say, oh, I'm going to take, you know, this solo that you're trying to protect or unit attachment just off the board.
Yep.
Isn't it only free if you Harmonious first?
His thing is he can cast a spell without spending focus. That's one of his abilities.
That's good.
Yeah, he can only do it once a turn, but then he does it through Blessing of Vengeance, and he gets +2 to attack and damage rolls. So you get to do it at focus at, you know, magic ability 10 and pal 13? Pal, what is fucking...
13 sounds right.
Pal 12s on Ashes to Ashes.
Including the bounces, though.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yep.
I thought it went up one.
And then he also has Rebuke, which is just a great control spell. So I don't know. I really like his kit, so that was where I went for my first list. And with the second list, I went with Harby. I've just always liked her. I mean, she's a 10 focus caster. How can you not be all about that? And I think with the way the scenario is now, I just think that being able... I think Martyr is just super strong. She will have problems because there's a good amount of Grievous out there, and she likes to heal a lot. So there could be issues there. But I took her in Exemplar Interdiction. I took a Devout, a Revenger, and a Sanctifier. Elias Gade, an Exemplar Seneschal. A Knight's Exemplar Seneschal. Rupert. 2 Knights Exemplar units with UAs, and then Max Errants with UA, and then Roven and Honor Guard, because she doesn't want to get shot. So, I don't know.
Nope, that's legit.
So,
and I do. There is a lot of Grievous Wound out there, but it's not like it's absolutely everywhere. And I do think, especially with the scenarios the way they are, being able to say, here's this contesting model, there's this individual thing, you will not kill it this turn.
yeah,
and just win you games.
Yeah, I mean, errants aren't what they used to be, but still having unyielding tuft errants that are just that you then can martyr, I feel like you can still just be like, you're not going to score this zone this turn, whereas normally they may be able to, and you may just be like, I'm going to martyr those extra three times, and you're not going to score.
Yeah, no, it does mess up with your turn execution, because you're like, okay, I need to kill this guy. Oh, wait, you know, he brotherhooded to somebody within 3 inches, and now, you know, you're throwing another attack in and martyrdom, and yeah, it definitely messes with your mind. You spend a lot of time in the tank trying to figure out how to get around that gear.
Yep. So I also don't know how well they necessarily pair together. I just was like, these are the casters I'm going to play. I'm going to make lists and just make sure they're in different themes. So on to Crix, who I assigned to Ryan. So what casters would you play there, buddy?
All right, so
go ahead.
I'm so ready to ridicule you. Go ahead.
So I actually did. I made lists as well, at least for Crix. I had to play. For the first caster I took was I had to play the caster with the boat. I mean Scar, Admiral of the Black Fleet. 7 initial attacks just seems like fun, especially because one of them has the knockdown. And then I took her in Slaughter Fleet, and this is where I'm probably going to have gone off the rails here, but I went 2 squads of Marauders and 1 squad of Blood Gorgers, Devil Shadows, Mutineers, the Dirge Seers, Juskin. Blood Tongue is on the Blood Gorgers because I figure her... Yeah, they need. I wanted to give them the Vengeance more than the other one, and... her No Sleeping on the Job still affects both units of Marauders. Mm-hmm. And then I took my battle groups, a Leviathan and a Corruptor, and a Statistics Blood Priest. I've got Wraith. My solos are the Wraithblade, Garlak Slaughterblorn, an Ogre Bokor, and a Misery Cage.
I don't play Crix, but based on what I've heard from talking to other Crix, that doesn't sound that far off. Brad.
I figure it'd be jamming a bunch of tough, no knockdown guys in people's faces who have ranged weapons, have the are ashen veiled. Then she's got D-Cell to help with if they do make it, make some armor 18, which might save them a little bit. And then she's a dash caster. Dash is just fun with speed 5 guys.
Yeah, I mean, you hit a lot of the right marks. The neat interaction that list can do. With whatever unit you put Jessica on, which is usually Blood Gorgers. One for the Vengeance, like you said, Ryan, and secondly for the Relentless Charge, because that list has no out for Pathfinder.
Yeah. That was the other thing.
So the one interesting thing this list can do, though, is let's say you shoot at a Blood Gorger unit and you lose 2 guys, right? Which triggers their Vengeance. Scar's Reinforcements ability also takes place during the same phase, so you get to return D3 guys. I forget her exact placement rules, but I think it comes out in her command within command range of the unit.
Yes.
And then the unit can Vengeance, and then they can fully activate. So you get you get to drop guys in front of Scar.
Oh yeah,
because Vengeance and then charge,
because Vengeance is not part of their combat action.
Right. So they also still get their combat action.
They have to forfeit.
Oh, yep. Does it?
Yeah.
Well, my bad.
But okay. They would
still get to attack. They get to basically
get the Vengeance
activation. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, so that part's interesting. For Scar, I think your Mercenary Solo is either going to be Eilish if you really want to have Upkeep Strip, or it's going to be Ragman. That list is a lot of POW 11s. Scar helps it a little bit with her Draconic Blessing, but POW 13s usually aren't enough to get through all the jacks or high armor things you're potentially going to be waiting through, so Ragman is fairly common. And then in that same vein, because the list is a lot of relatively low POW weapons, another common choice, especially with the Crix chat I'm in, is people looking at the validity of double, or not even double, but including the actual boarding party. They're Power and Strength 13, they have gangs, so they go to Power and Strength 15. If you Draconic Blessed them, they're 17, and if you're lucky enough to get Dark Shroud on them from Ragman, you have Power and Strength 19 infantry models.
Yeah, I took the Shield Guard just because having a huge base caster that can just get shot at seemed bad.
Yep, absolutely.
Her armor gets up kind of high, which is kind of nice. But I've been playing a lot into Grant, and getting your caster shot sucks.
I don't know what you're talking about, sir.
Although, Ryan, you don't need a shield guard because if you keep the Blood Priestess within three, you have Sack Pawn.
I didn't think about that.
I'm lying. You have Sucker, which is forced Sack Pawn.
Yep. Okay. All right, cool. Yeah, so the Broke Orb would come out then, and then probably Eilish.
Eilish or Ragband. The Blood Priestess also has Dispel on her blade, so if you position her well enough, you can make it so that she can attack any one of your units in the butt and knock it off. The one thing, and I don't have Crix to talk about this week, just to kind of bring it up with Slaughter Fleet, is between the Blood Priestess, Axiara, Dirdseers, the Gangfighter on Jax, just the infantry that's in the list between Shard Pirates, Marauders, and Blood Gorgers, with Jessica being able on one of the latter two units. Then you also have Boarding Party and Smog Belchers as your two Black Ogryn things. This theme force is the most diverse toolbox of a theme force that Crix can get. I'd argue, and I feel pretty comfortable in the statement, that I think any Crix caster in the faction can play this theme without truly and really inhibiting themselves. The one that wants it probably the least is Scar 1, but that's only because of the Blood Priestess having to kill a model and then killing another model with Rit Sacrifice to save her the focus. So she effectively kills like two guys a turn, and if she ever misses her attack roll, then you're not getting it at all. But like short of that interaction, there's not a bad list that can be played in Slaughter Fleet. Additionally, if you take Smog Belchers and Axiara, you just have discount Cloud Wall. Because you give Repo 3 to a unit of guys that when they shoot leaves a 3-inch cloud on top of themselves.
Yeah, we had a good old Cloud Wall jerk-off fest last week.
Yeah, it was Coven versus Haley 3, so we both Cloudwalled at each other, and we were both miserable.
Yeah.
So, Ryan, what's your second caster?
So my second caster, and this is where I probably go truly off the rails, is the Witch Coven in Black Industries. I've got two Iron Lich Overseers with Seethers on them, and then I have four Slayers, two Night Wretches, and Deathjack.
Hmm.
And then I have a Machine Wraith just for scenario presence.
So why that theme?
This part of this is me wanting to look at having heavies that move quickly and have an decent out for shooting. And then I wanted to put the the Witch Coven. I picked the Witch Coven and I went, you know what? I want to see the nine Slayer list. And then I'm like, but I like Deathjack with the Witch Coven, and I like this and that. And so it changed very quickly off of nine Slayers, but I don't know. I feel like the Witch Coven probably can protect, can mess with people, as far as like stopping charges, so that the Slayers are guaranteed to get their alpha, and then just more casting seems broken. The more spells I can get off without having to expose the Witch Coven seems better. And then the Slayer, the Seethers are in there for Dark Shroud, and because with the Iron Lich Overseers, they're kind of interesting for Jack Marshall Jax because of the free charge, and then the Crusher. Crusher's the one that's an attack plus damage, I think, right?
On the Jack Marshall?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, so, I don't know. I don't know if it's good or not, but...
Brad, ridicule this man.
Yeah, it's not great. So Inferno Machine's great, but it's better off with like just a few amounts of high value jacks. Death Jack's usually not the one you want to send in because it has no defensive ability for him other than just sending him in. You have feet, which is pretty great. You can occultate him. That means you're not Inferno Machining him. The list is like relatively low attack volume. The reason Lich 3 gets away with it is because when he gives them all unyielding, they can kind of stand in the infantry longer to get their multiple initials into the infantry models they're standing in front of. Beyond that, the Night Wretches just kind of throw up on things that are close to them. I mean, in the list pair, your other list kind of murder fucks infantry pretty well. So they cover each other in that regard. But it just makes your list selection at the table potentially a little bit harder. If they have two mixed arms lists that attack the game at different angles.
Yeah,
you could find yourself playing the wrong list.
Yep, very easily.
All right, let's move on. Next is Kador, and that was Brad.
So what would I play? I'd probably play Vlad 2 in Wolves of Winter. I think that Doom Reaver list has the ability to reach out and grab things it normally shouldn't at, like, disgustingly high mat and pow, combined with, like, casted sign of importance on a single thing is pretty great. It's just really... it's really quick. Similar to Scar 1, you can lose a decent portion of your army on the way in, and it doesn't matter which ones get there, as long as that some of them get there, because when they do with Vlad 2 feet, they're going to do work. He's also fairly difficult to assassinate, just in the way his armor goes up the more he gets damaged. So the assassination runs that are like the boosted PAL 12s become a lot less likely on Vlad 2 than a lot of other casters. And then for the list pair with that, only because I really enjoy a list that can put pressure on a caster, I'd probably go with Sorcia 1 and Winterguard Command.
Sure.
The list is a ranged-heavy list. It can play into infantry centered list pretty well, in that you can just deny either their range presence by stationing them, or their sludge across the table by same thing by stationing them. You usually have a wall of guns that you can make incredibly reliable with your feet. The list has the access to the battle engine, so it has a board piece that is incredibly difficult to remove, as well as something that Sorcia can hide behind fairly reliably, especially in conjunction with terrain. And if an opponent's caster gets too close, like, you can just wind rush yourself, balance charge yourself, and then get into melee. It only leaves you with, I think, 2 focus left when you do that. But, I mean, if you do, and you haven't feated yet, you have an auto-hitting weapon master, I think, power strength 12 from 13. Memory's sake. 13, thank you. I was doing it from memory. Then you're able to buy 2 more attacks, or just power strength 13 weapon masters. So she can do it on her own. It reminds me a little bit of Lich 1, like, her feet doesn't kill the models themselves, but she makes it so her army does it, well, you know, by accident.
The best part, too, is if you go in, if you have to go in on them, if you stay at maximum 2-inch reach, you are just out of range of those big AoE 4s and 3s that are coming in. So they get stationaried. If you've got a little bit left, now they're stationaried. You just whack them with your caster a bunch of times, and you can lay in a bunch of AoEs on them. It's actually really nasty.
All right, let's move on so we can hit the rest of these. The next one was also Ryan, and that was Rhett.
So this one, I only made one list for this one. The other caster that I didn't bother making the list for is Virus 1. I think that's more just because...
Cat touched you in a bad place.
Oh, every time we've played that caster, it's every time.
Do you mean Catherine Royer, the champion of PAX?
The best, yeah, best Rhett player, NA?
Yeah, she has bent me over and taught me War Machine lessons I didn't know I needed multiple times with that caster, and I still don't know how to beat that list. But and that caster just seems like a lot of fun between Bird's Eye and then all the stuff you can do with it. The other caster, the one I actually built the list for, and I threw this together without looking at Discount Games Inc. or anything, but I think I probably stole somebody's list with this. And it's a Lara Death Shadow. It's got 30 halbs, three squads, all with UAs, Nis with a Solus Escort, Linissa Ravel, Houseguard Thane, Alan Veer, Banshee, Chimera, and a Faint Knight Guardian.
That's really close to what my Gyrolid runs.
That's what I figured. Yeah. Because as I'm putting it together, I'm like, well, I want the 30 halbs with this, and then we're talking, and I had the defenders, the Iosian defender, the axe guys in first, then I was like, nah, I kind of want something with a ranged presence, and I put that in, and then I'm sitting there, and like, I feel like I had a conversation with Mike about a list like that. I'm like, I probably just Shanghai'd a list, but it just seems like fun to have that many dudes just swarming across the table.
It's a nightmare. Like, I played Grim 1 with what was it, Mountain King and a Glacier King into it, and
I said, well, Mike, if you can take both the kings off the table, I'll shake your hand and concede the game. And he goes, challenge accepted. And that's all. It was horrible.
Is that what he did? Did he do
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Because I got cute. He was running a TFG in it.
Right.
AFG. Yeah. And so I got Grim up and I feed it and I'm like, haha, you can't charge. And he goes, cool. I'm going to hit you with the push gun a couple times. And he physically moved Grim so that they weren't in his feet anymore.
That's just wrong.
Yeah, it was great. It was great.
All right. Next, we had Pete with Mercs.
Okay, Mercs. I tried to steer away from what I know I wouldn't invest the time into trying to learn to play. I love Magnus 1 because that was my very first caster in War Machine, but he's been terrible since Mark 1, so he's out, and Magnus 2 has bad touched me too many times, so I didn't go for that. So instead, again, going with that aspect of I love control, I went ahead and picked Gordon.
Nice.
Gordon Grunback. So his feat is just crazy for me. You choose a table edge in a distance up to 8 inches, and then you push enemy models out of that control range. You can push them up to 8 inches away, and then those guys that are affected suffer -3 speed, rat, and death, and cannot give or receive orders, cannot charge, or make slam or trample power attacks.
That feat is so fucking good.
Well, it gets better when you actually start talking to people that know how to play it. Mm-hmm. So Jason Lucas from Battle Driven gave me a crazy list. Part of Gorton's stack is he has solid ground. While in his control range, friendly faction models can knock down or do not suffer blast damage, right? So that's really good for an infantry-intensive list. So you're going to take some Nis Hunters, some Hammer Dwarves. You're also going to take one solo. This is mandatory, and it's Bosun Grogspar. His melee attack has automatic pitch. So what you do is you have him walk up behind Gorton. You automatically pitch him forward. Gorton's going to land. He'll take a bow, so he has to sacrifice his combat action, but he can still walk up 4 inches and then feet.
Ugh, gross.
Good extension. It's a D6 that he's pitched, I believe. So it's random, but you can definitely play into it. D6 inches away. But the nice thing is not only is it random for you, but it's also random for your opponent. So if your opponent knows your shtick, they don't know exactly. It's anywhere between 1 to 6 inches extra threat extension that Gorton's going to have.
And then that's hysterical. And then he can just pick the table edge, like, to keep him safe. He just keeps the table edge behind him, right? And then it's like, you can't advance forward, so get fucked.
No. No, because the enemy models are pushed that way.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. So I
was thinking of the whose feet is that? They can't advance towards that table.
Magnus 2.
Magnus 2. Sorry.
And you get to pick 2 table edges.
That's right.
You could do it where you pick behind you and you say 0 inches, so nothing is pushed, nothing moves, and they're still going to be affected and everything, but I don't like that.
No. That, I feel like you want the scenario and just be like, all right, push them 8 inches away, and now they can't charge you, and they're -3 speed.
Yeah, and on top of that, too, he also has a rock wall that he can put down in front of him so that he can, be a little bit safer when he does his shenanigans. So I'm definitely going to, if I ever do make it to Mercs, he's on the list to play.
I like it.
And then the other caster, I'm looking at a melee-centric, is Captain Phineas Shea. This guy, you're only going to play him in Pirates for the most part, from what I can tell. There is going to be a Pirates happening eventually, so I'm sure he's going to get some love and attention. But he has the crazy spell, A Coup de Main, which gives himself and friendly privateer models activating his control range +2-inch movement when advancing. And then his Warjack can charge spinning a foot. So that makes his stuff really fast. And then his feet... friendly faction models currently in Shea's control range immediately advance up to 3 inches. They're going to ignore free strikes, and they gain Pathfinder.
So he can have a plus 5-inch movement on his feet turn when he wants to. So stuff is just going to come screaming across the board.
Yeah. I like that. That's out there, but it's not like, oh, picked Connie B.
Yeah. And he also has Veil of Mist. So I've been playing a lot of games into Coven who have Veil of Mist. And the things you can get done with Veil of Mist is just insane. Like, you don't even think about it. When that template goes down, and next thing you know, they're walking behind you and stabbing you, and it's pretty wild.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Next, I think, was Convergence, which was Brad. This probably shouldn't take too long. What do you got, buddy?
Orion, Axis, both in Destruction Initiative. I'm going to take all the Galvanizers I can fit in the list with Axis, because I think that list is astounding. And Orion, I'm going to go with the Axiom route as opposed to the Lightning route, because I think it can play into more things more reliably. Anyone want to talk about why I chose those, or are we pretty good to just go past them?
No, I think that's pretty self-explanatory.
Real quick, though, with the Axis list, would you have taken one heavy and as many Galvanizers as you can cram in, or all Galvanizers?
All Galvanizers.
The Galvanizers.
Huh. Ooh, the Mark Howard special, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I always liked it. I always liked it with one heavy because it helps you hit stuff. But
what I'm afraid that you think I said was some of your bacon, but I want all the bacon.
Basically, yeah. It's how many governors can I fit? I'll have that many.
Yeah, and I know that I butchered that. Okay, next is trolls. Does that sound right?
Yes.
Yes, trolls. That was me.
Ooh, interesting.
Okay. So, I think as I already talked about, I was going Kalandra 100% from the start. I love Starcrossed. I play a faction that doesn't get to take Wrong Eye and Snapjaw ever, so I don't ever get to play that. So I wanted Starcrossed all day. So I went Kalandra, and I went in Band of Heroes. I just kind of wanted to do, it's not super death skew, but it's a little different. And this is where I think my list building fell apart, because, like, I don't know what to do with War Beasts. So I went Kalandra with a Rune Bearer, a Brawler and a Mauler, a Stone Scribe Chronicler, a Trollkin Champ Hero, Max Fenblades with UA, double Max Champs, one of which was Scaldy, Max Stone with the Stone Scribe Elder, and then a Bellows Crew, because, I don't know, she's 14-14, so, like, that scares me. So I felt like I could at least put down a Cloud, and maybe that helps. I don't really know. I just wanted to play with Starcrossed, and I just kind of built a list. So go, ruin me.
Well, I'll be honest. I'm not sure why she doesn't get played with more.
Just don't even, it's fine.
Leave it alone.
She's being played an adequate amount in the meta. We're happy with that. Let's not stir the pot here.
I've made several lists with her, and I always end up playing the new shinies. Not that the Trolls faction isn't basically all one big new shiny for me, but just because I've been having more fun with stuff, and her game is very, she plays a very methodical game in a faction that's already, like, grind you down kind of thing. Now that it's not fun, it's not boring like Vlad 1 used to be boring, but it's definitely a very careful positioning, very not going to do much with my caster kind of game that you play with her, and you let your force go nuts. But yeah, I definitely think she's better than she gets credit for right now.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely agree. Kalandra is probably the hidden gem, and I think we're going to see more and more of her, especially once you get people like John Henry Jr. playing her. And I think I heard rumblings too that what's his name? Canadian guy, Chris Dancock. Dancox is going to be playing her too. I heard rumblings about that, so I think once they start playing her, it'll catch on, and we will be all very sad.
Yep, I'd be sad too, but I was like, I want Starcross, so 18-inch Starcross bubble seems real good, so let's do that. And then to pair that, I this time I kind of like thought about a beast. I actually started with a beast brick, and then I was like, no, fuck that shit. I want to play Grim 1, because he seems sweet. I really like that feat now, especially with the no charge back on it. So I went with a just, this might be total garbage, jank, but I went with a Grim Angus, like, gunline. So I took him in Creel Company. I put a Rune Bearer on him, which, like, I don't, that, he probably doesn't want that, but, double bombers, two Fellcaller heroes, long chops, just cause, like, he's the shit. There's not, I feel like there's not a reason to not have long chops. Max Scattergunners with UA, Max Sluggers, two Fire Eater units, Pig Lookouts, and then, Min Stone with a, with the Northkin Elder. I feel like I think all I did in this list is take models I wanted to play and put them in a list, but
We're in a safe place. This is a safe space.
No, it's not. Okay. No, no. Fucking trash me. Trash that shit. Go.
So you definitely want a Rune Bearer with him because it's going to extend his control range by plus two.
Oh, yeah. That's why. Yeah, that's right. That is why I did that.
Yeah. Also, too, he can cast Mantrap, which is the most overlooked spell on Grim 1's card, I feel like.
I don't think it's... Do you see people playing Grim 1 and not casting Mantrap?
I've seen a couple, but it's okay. Safe space, right?
I love that spell. Especially...
Yeah, now, Grim 1...
Somebody with the bearer casting it.
Yeah, yeah. Or you get a one of your war beasts engaged. And you can throw a man trap on it and then knock everyone down. It's pretty clutch. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of the sluggers, but eh.
Do they just, is it because of the random shots? Is that?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's random shots.
Sure. I just was looking at like guns and I'm like, oh, well, even if they all get one shot and then I feat, I should have another turn where they don't die, assuming it's a more melee-centric list, so I don't know.
The problem is that there's better guns and trolls that do almost the exact same thing, right? So, I don't know.
All right, nope, that's
fine. It's not a bad list. It doesn't feel like it has the cohesion.
No, it certainly isn't good, and I knew that. I just was like, I want to play Grim 1 with guns, so like, let's do that. So, all right, that's fine. Next was Circle, and that's Pete.
Circle was very easy for me. I would go back to Cro-Mac 1 in a heartbeat.
I was going to say, didn't you play Circle?
I've played pretty much everything, I think. But yeah, I did play Circle for a little bit. Cro-Mac 1, Bestial is just a great spell. And he has Warpath, which you can't go wrong with. I wish obviously for a little bit better. But yeah, I'd go running back to Cro-Mac 1. And then in a heartbeat, no doubt about it, I would play Kruger 1 in the Tharn theme, hands down, done. Brad, you know why.
It's good.
Yeah.
Really, I like is that list.
Yeah, so no, Kruger 1 has his feat is he lays down
the clouds.
Lightning clouds.
Right.
Yeah, so that's really good for spot removal on infantry. Additionally, he has cloud removal for a spell. So Colgrimma doesn't want to play into that at all, which I had the pleasure to do. One random night down at games and stuff against Mr. Paul, he taught me a lesson and made me love this list.
Yeah, I fucking forgot about Gale Winds. That spell's awesome.
Yeah.
Lightning tendrils.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I'm sold. I'm in. I like that one. Next is Legion, and that was Brad.
So I'm going to abstain from saying Animag. Two reasons. One, she's too new. Secondly, I'm not a huge fan of casters who don't have some sort of threat extension. Let me phrase that. Because she does in Gallows, but not the kind I want to rely on. So I'm a big fan of speed of lists or being able to influence how your opponents have to play the table. So that all being said, I think I'd likely go a route of a Kallus 2. Mort Neighbor was my first Crix caster. I like her a lot. I think he plays relatively similar. I have no idea the list I'd want to put around him, but I'd like to spend the time to figure it out. And then beyond that, I am a fan of when casters are paired with other incarnations of themselves. It feels like a Crixlist in Legion, so I'd probably be playing Kallus 1. It's just a field of dudes. They all get to hit with what's the spell called the Scar 1 has?
Dark Guidance.
Thank you so much. With Dark Guidance has a damage fixer in Ignite and has a feat that allows him to play a long game by turning all of your models your opponents kill into incubi.
All the incubi?
Yeah, of course. Have you seen my Chris collection? I'll buy whatever models I have to play a list. So, yeah, no, I'd buy the shit out of it. I mean, if my opponent has the volume of attacks to kill all the incubi that come in, like, that's attacks that didn't go to killing my other infantry, so, like, it all works out in the end. At the end of the turn, I don't know how many incubi I should expect to net out of his feet, but I do expect to get models that are then difficult to remove because they get the +2 defense from the feet, I thought his feet was only +2.
It's +3 for
Freddy. It's even getting better. You're convincing me more to play Kallus 1.
It's really bad. It's really good.
luckily, the one time I had to see that list when I played Jake, most of my things were e-leaps, so I only had, like, 8 incubi, which I felt like was a total win. So,
Nope, Kallus 2 is a great caster, or warlock. one of our local guys, Derek, has been playing it in Primal Terrors, and it's pretty goddamn gross, because he runs it with... Golab, and so he gets sprint on a stick. Ugh. Which, yeah. Ugh,
that's gross.
Yeah, that seems probably really good for him.
Seems like something he would want.
And he's got overrun, so there's some neat stuff where, you know, I tried to position so that I couldn't be seen, and he was able to overrun himself into the woods and then charge in. It was just insane. Did not see it coming, so...
Go the old Kallus 1, Kallus 2 combo. Yeah, it's just nice. Next is Scorn, and that was Ryan.
So I've got Xerxes 2 on his lovingly large base. The idea of having a bunch of Speed +2 War Beasts and then Ignite and just his personal threat. I don't know if I'd go the... masked Archidons, or if I just go, it'd be a beast break, and I love that model too. Just having that the huge caster going around, I think would be fun. I tried to build lists for Scorn, and like I started to build them, and then I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I want one with I want double turtles, and I'm like, okay, what the hell else do I put it? Okay, put the whip guys in, and then I couldn't do it. But the other caster I'd take would be Jalam. He just seems fun. He's one of those casters that has a ton of personal impact on the game. That gun is just going to be going every turn. You're going to be killing something important with it. And then his feats just really good. So those would be the two I'd be picking. I didn't really do lists up. I just couldn't see anything, but yeah, Jalam especially seems like just a lot of fun. Definitely different than what the other casters had to offer. And I love casters with personal threat, and having a gun that matters is kind of nice.
It did seem fun. I had minions. I did not make lists because I'm going to kind of cop out here. I would either be playing Rask it would be Rask. I don't remember whatever the general popular list is. I just really like his feet and the stuff on his trident cannon is super sweet. And then I would pair that with Barney 1 with a Dracodile after playing into that at the Sioux. I really like that list.
You like this emerged Dracodile?
Yeah, it's fucking sweet, man. That was a lot of fun. So I think I would definitely play that if I was going to do minions. And lastly was Grumblebums, and that was Pete.
Grumblebums was really easy. My son played them for the longest time. So he played Dreamer into me probably 50 times. So I would have
to play Dreamer just so that I can do the evil that he did to me onto other people. the ability to create phantasms from model destroyed in your controller area is insane. You're like, all right, cool, I'm going to get this zone, and then he pops. And then Manifest Destiny and Abysmal Gate are really good on her. And then the second Warlock I would look at in a heartbeat is the Wanderer. He has Starcrossed, just like you, Grant, with Kalandra. Starcrossed is an amazing spell. He also has Veil of Mists, which, again, I like the ability to move through enemy models and do all sorts of shenanigans. And then his road marker mechanic is a really neat thing, where you put down the three road markers, and then if an enemy model touches them, you can hop around. So.
Yep. So what did you guys think? I know Pete and I kind of said, Ryan, Brad, did you guys have fun with this, with that little exercise? Did you learn anything?
Oh, I had a blast with it. It definitely makes me want to go back through the Crix catalog especially and try to figure out what the fuck everything does.
Mm-hmm. Slaughterfleet's a fucking can of worms, though. The ability to just put a cloud wall in with any caster that you might want it with, to if a caster fixes armor pretty well in like a Denegra one or an Asphyxius one, maybe you don't want to go with the boarding party and you just bring a handful of guys. If you have a caster that runs Jax better than others in like an Iakos 2 or a Coven to a Venithrax, maybe you only want to go to 40 points worth of infantry to get two free souls and then take more Jax to really try to leverage the gangfighter theme benefit. Like, there's a lot of directions that Theme Force can go. I don't think there's ever going to be a time or place to where you'll be talking to someone and they'll say the Slaughterfleet list is blank. Whereas I think it's pretty safe to say the Black Industries list is either Lich 3 or Denegra 2. I think that's pretty... like solidly landed upon it at this point. Can you play with other casters? Absolutely. Are those two probably a little above the others? Likely, yes. I don't think that we're going to get to that case with Slaughterfleet. I think it's so much of a toolbox, and it has something for every caster. It's just going to depend on what you want your list to do kind of in a vacuum, and then beyond that in the list pair to kind of answer what the other list needs to solve.
Yeah.
So, Brad, how close are you to having your Slaughterfleet list?
I mean, I own a lot of the models that exist in it. Some of the stuff that just got released a couple days ago I haven't picked up yet, but I plan to get that soon. And then beyond that, I just need to kind of get it built and painted. But I own probably about half of what I need in boxes, and I've stored up a decent amount of store credit from stores just kind of in the area to fill in the rest.
Will you have it for the finale of Star Wars?
For the finale of Star Wars? When is that again?
It's in June.
Theoretically, I could. Is it likely? I'd say probably not.
Okay. Just checking.
A little scared there, Pete?
Just planning.
Not planning.
Real quick, and then we're going to get out. I will say, playing into the Coven Slaughterfleet list, that was... that was really interesting. I think Brad is right, just based on what I saw on the table. There's so many casters that could play in that. There's so many variations of that list. I think it's going to be really hard to nail down. I think that's going to be one of those lists, kind of like where Halley 3 got, where it's like, okay, there's two different versions. I think that's going to be like that on steroids, and they'll be totally different. I think it's going to be like, oh, I'm playing the Slaughterfleet list with this or with X caster, but there's going to be probably at least 3 to 5 iterations that'll be very good and very popular.
That's good. I wish every faction had that, because
hashtag Crix probs.
Yeah, right. Well, it just, that is that thing that I think some of the factions are missing now, is that I'm playing, so if I say I'm playing Winter Guard Command, there's like some iterations in it, but you pretty much know exactly what's in my list. And that's true of most of the theme forces. There's some exceptions, but I would love for every faction to have that one theme force that is the all comers, the generalized theme list like that. But we'll see.
Anything else, guys? I think otherwise we're gonna wrap it up.
I've got nothing.
All right,
great. For all of us, including the King of Baltimore, I'm Grant.
I'm Ryan.
I'm the King.
And I'm Pete.